The talk you are about to hear is by Roshi Amala Wrightson, teacher at the Auckland Zen Centre.
Today is the 19th of April, 2025, day two of our autumn urban retreat. And for Tejo this morning, we're going to take up a koan. This is from the Shoyo Roku, number 67, the Hua Yen Sutra's Wisdom. And it's very short. The Hua Yen Sutra says, "As I now see all beings everywhere, each of them is endowed with the wisdom and virtue of the Tathagata, but because of their attachments and delusion, they do not realize it." Now, the speaker here is Buddha Shakyamuni. And these are one of the versions of his, what he said when he came to Great Awakening. And you can see in this that it's a vast realization. "As I now see all beings everywhere," so seeing with his all-seeing eye, "all beings everywhere, nobody left out of this. Each of them is endowed with the wisdom and virtue of the Tathagata." The Tathagata, this is the way that the Buddha, historic Buddha, referred to himself, and translates something like the thus come one, or sometimes the thus gone one. And the case starts, the Hua Yen Sutra says, this Hua Yen Sutra, which also appears in the name of the koan, the Hua Yen Sutra's Wisdom, is a highly esteemed Mahayana Sutra. It's a voluminous, very varied in its teachings, but the primary theme is our interconnectedness. We'll look at that in a minute. In English, it's usually translated as the Flower Ornament Sutra or the Flower Garland Sutra. And the garlands are the sutras that appear within the sutra. The Sanskrit is Avatamsaka Sutra. Hua Yen is the Chinese. And then in Japan, it's referred to as the Kigon Kyo, Kigon Sutra. Now this primary theme that it has is of the universe as a vast living hologram, and the most well known image that's used to bring the holographic nature of the universe to life is known as Indra's net. Buddhist scholar Francis Cook has written a book about the Avatamsaka Sutra, and he describes this Indra's net. "Far away in the heavenly abode of the great god Indra, there is a wonderful net which has been hung by some cunning artificer in such a manner that it stretches out infinitely in all directions. in accordance with the extravagant tastes of deities, the artificer has hung a single glittering jewel in each eye of the net. And since the net itself is infinite in dimension, the jewels are infinite in number. There hang the jewels, glittering like stars in the of the first magnitude, a wonderful sight to behold. If we now arbitrarily select one of those jewels for inspection and look closely at it, we discover that in its polished surface are reflected all the other jewels in the net, infinite in number. Not only that, but each of the jewels reflected in this one jewel is also reflecting all the other jewels, so that there is an infinite reflecting process occurring. It's very specific image here, which is at the same time quite mind-boggling. To think of ourselves as a mirror reflecting all the other jewels in the universe, containing all the other jewels in the universe, because we're transparent. Elsewhere, Francis Crook writes, each individual is at once the cause for the whole and is caused by the whole. And what is called existence is a vast body made up of an infinity of individuals, all sustaining each other and defining each other. Elsewhere, in the sutra, there's the image used of a tripod to convey this. Since a tripod is three independent poles, each of the three parts is simultaneously acting as cause or support for the tripod, and yet is indubitably part of a whole which is being supported. So we support and are supported simultaneously. Interpenetration of all beings in a vast, endless universe. So that's, you could say that's the context for this statement by the Buddha. No doubt, all of you here who have been to a workshop, Zen Center introductory workshop, will have heard this teaching, because we always include it in our introduction to people when they come for the workshop. The version that we generally quote is a little bit different, and it puts in the bit more of it. The beginning goes like this. Wonder of wonders, all beings are Buddha, endowed with wisdom and virtue, and it is only because people's minds have been turned upside down by delusive thinking that they fail to perceive this. Wonder of wonders. This is really all of it. Just that. But for our sakes, and for the sakes of all the readers of the Avatamsaka Sutra over the past 2,500 years, this is included. We get we get a little bit of explanation with it here, beyond the ah, that all Buddhas are endowed with wisdom and virtue. This is one of the points of the koan, is to demonstrate what wisdom and virtue are. Wisdom here means prajna wisdom. Wisdom that goes beyond ordinary knowledge or acquisition of information and involves realization of the true nature of reality, different ways of summing that up, but it certainly includes seeing deeply into impermanence, into suffering, and into the insubstantiality of ourself. So it's emphasizing here the emptiness aspect of our true nature. In Sesshin, we have on our altar Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of wisdom, transcendent wisdom, Prajna. And he's depicted riding a lion and with the sutra books in one hand and a sword in the other. And he uses the sword to cut away delusion, to cut through all that's deemed superfluous, extra. This is one aspect of our Buddha nature. Virtue here is used for the other aspect of our true nature. It would be Sila in Sanskrit here. And it refers to ethical conduct. Or maybe in Buddhist terms, it's better to say non-harm here. Action based on compassion rather than, with the emphasis on compassion rather than wisdom. Compassion and goodwill. What is it that we can do that gives rise to happiness of others and ourselves? And in altars, Buddhist altars, this is embodied in often in Kanon, Avalokiteshvara. Or sometimes it's Samanta Bahadra, Fugen in Japanese, who's the Bodhisattva of action, of skillful means. So whereas we have the essence being expressed through Manjushri, then it's the functioning of our true nature, our kindness and compassion, which is embodied in these other bodhisattvas, Samanta Bahadra, Kishtagarbha, Avalokiteshvara. So again, he says, as now I now see all beings everywhere, each of them is endowed with the wisdom and virtue of the Tathagata, but because of their attachments and delusions, they do not realize it. So another way of seeing this statement is it's another way of expressing the Four Noble Truths. Suffering and the way out of suffering. We get here in this version, in this Avatamsaka version, it's the the way out of suffering that is expressed first, our innate wisdom and virtue. But then there's a but. The suffering comes from our attachments and our delusions, the big delusion being the delusion of self, of separate being. These persistent thoughts that we have prevent us from seeing our Buddhahood. It's there, but it's perfect and whole and complete just as it is, but we have trouble seeing it, which is what brings us to practice. In the Shoyoroku, Book of Equanimity, there are various commentaries that come with the koan. The collection was made by Hongzhi, who we've come across many times in Taisho's, wonderful master. He collected the main cases and then wrote a verse to go with each one. And then about almost 100 years later, Bansho, his Chinese name is Wen Song, he added a preface and various other commentary, bits of commentary to the main case. But here is his preface, so this comes before the case. A speck of dust contains the 10,000 shapes. A single thought is endowed with the 3,000 realms. How much more so a great man crowned with heaven and standing upon the earth? A sharp one, when you speak of the head, knows of the tail. A sharp one who, when you speak of the head, knows the tail. Don't disregard your very own spirit and bury your family treasure. So this is quite a rich preface and makes sense now we've explored where the what the main teachings of the Avatamsaka Sutra are. So he starts by saying, a speck of dust contains the 10,000 shapes. 10,000 shapes is just a way of saying everything, the myriad things of the universe. A speck of dust contains the 10,000 shapes. And with the knowledge that we have now of our universe, this is confirmed by evolutionary cosmology, that everything in the universe is necessary to the existence of any one atom of it. Everything that is in the universe now is there in potential form at the beginning of the great fireball that started off this phase of our universe, the great blossoming of matter and energy. A single thought is endowed with the 3,000 realms. This is 3,000 realms is just another way to talk about or phenomena again, everything. How much more so a great man crowned by heaven and standing upon earth? This is a reference to the Buddha who made this statement. This, he continues to speak of the Buddha. How a sharp one who, when you speak of the head, knows of the tail. Head and tail are used in Chinese philosophy, you could say, to talk about the nub and the what is governed by the nub. So the head is refers to the like if you have a snake, the head is the the end you have to watch for, the end you have to be cautious about. Catch a snake behind its mouth so that it can't bite you. But to know of both the head and the tail suggests somebody who's not one-sided, who can see things from the absolute perspective, the essential perspective, and can also see things from the relative side. Activity expressed here in this koan as wisdom and virtue, essential wisdom and our relative wisdom, the other side. Just read a little bit now from a commentary by Jerry Shishin Wick in his book of equanimity commentaries. He says, "Our deluded thoughts and our attachments blind us to our true nature. A deluded thought is any thought that creates a gap between ourselves and others or other things, or between ourselves and ourselves. Anything that creates a gap. Anytime we're relating to others with a strong sense of self and other, either raising up ourselves or putting down others. This is the fundamental delusion, the thing we come to our sitting to work on and which we discover right there when we look at ourselves. It's not so hard to recognize this teaching, but to realize it. In the little preface, Bansho says, "Don't disregard your very own spirit and bury your family treasure." Don't disregard your very own spirit and bury your family treasure. Our very own spirit is the spirit of the Tathagata. Our very own treasure, our family treasure, is our wisdom and virtue. family treasure is something that's there in the house. It's not something you have to bring in or import. It's our birthright. It's who we are. Wick then relates a story from a movie, Christmas Story, A Christmas Story. I haven't seen this, but he says, in the movie, a young boy believes that if only he had a Red Ryder BB gun with a double barrel action, then his life would be perfect. Each one of us has our own elusive Red Ryder BB gun. Everyone warned the boy, be careful, you'll put your eye out. As long as we grasp after it, it will definitely put out our eye. We'll be blind to what's in front of us. And then he gives some examples of the ideas that we're attached to what, consciously or unconsciously. I can't do it. I won't do it. I'm not as good as everyone else. I'm better than everyone else. I'm stupid. I want enlightenment. I am enlightened. Zazen is easy for everyone except me. No doubt one or other of these will have resonated with most people in the Zendo. And you can add your own one to the list. It is very necessary, very important to see these stories in us, to identify the ones that are bothering us, burdening us, and then we can let go. Have to see it, accept it, and then we can let them go, because we've seen through them, know that they're not solid. Master Dogen expressed it very clearly. To study the Buddha the way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. As long as you believe that there's a separate self, you won't clearly see. It's very difficult to let go of it because it takes courage to let go of that notion of self. If you let go of the self, how are you going to function? How are you going to know what right from wrong? We may have these fears coming up after we've come to close to the brink of really throwing ourselves into the koan, or the breath, or the shikantaza. Suddenly we're concerned about being there on the edge of the abyss. And all our fears come to the surface, fears about losing control, about going crazy, about not fitting in. The good thing is, the good karma that we have is that we have methods, we have these practices which can help us navigate these violent sometimes and dangerous seeming seas. We spend all our energies trying to protect or aggrandize the self, or to pity it. Dogen continues, to forget the self is to be enlightened by the 10,000 things. If you just let go of your attachments to your ideas about who you are, then all phenomena, the 10,000 dharmas, will reveal your enlightenment, your wisdom, as the virtue of the Buddha Tathagata. It's simple. It's very simple what we have to do. Nobody said it was easy, but it really is just a matter of trusting the process. There is an old story of a monk who carries a sack of horse shit around with him. Each time he goes to a monastery, he puts his sack down, looks around, and says, "Boy, this place stinks. I'm not staying here." Then he picks up his sack and carries it with him to the next place. And surprise, that place stinks too. There's only one constant in all of the troubles we have in our life, ourselves. We can take encouragement from this statement too. Maybe we can feel like it's just too much. But in our troubles, when faced, there we can start to see ourselves as we really are. That's why we can rejoice in our difficulties, because they will lead us to our true self. I think Thich Nhat Hanh says something like, when aspiring to go gain freedom from our sufferings, our suffering leads the way. We can transmute our suffering into wisdom and virtue. We've developed certain ways of behaving, certain patterns, certain habits over our lifetimes. That's how we define ourselves, how we identify ourselves. That's our secure haven. Even though we may not be fully satisfied or fully comfortable, at least it's familiar. So this practice requires that we let go of our most cherished views. To forget the self is to be enlightened by the 10,000 things, including the Dharma of having a difficult time. Along with letting go of our most cherished self, we have to let go of this notion of getting something, of getting somewhere. Master Xing Yin talks about the right attitude for doing Sesshin as being okay with being a good for nothing. We're all good for nothings. The practice itself is it's already the result. We can think in terms of cause and effect, but we come to see when we realize this wisdom and compassion that cause and effect are one. We've developed certain ways of behaving, certain patterns, certain habits over our lifetimes. That's how we define ourselves, how we identify ourselves. That's our secure haven. Even though we may not be fully satisfied or fully comfortable, at least it's familiar. I think this is a case for many of us that we hesitate to leap beyond what is familiar, at least. So this practice requires that we let go of our most cherished views. To forget the self is to be enlightened by the 10,000 things, including the Dharma of having a difficult time. Difficult time, easy time, both are true nature functioning. One master, he said, difficulty and ease alternate. Therein lies the way. Therein lies the way, not in one or the other. But being able to ride out difficult times, not be thrown, and not to be intoxicated and puffed up when things are going well. Fantasies of attainment and admiration from others and advancement in various ways. To drop all of that. Master Om Mon told his disciples, every day is a good day. Maizumi Roshi, Jeffrey Cheshenwick's teacher, Maizumi Roshi added, even having difficulties every day is a good day. How can that be? If I have difficulties, it's a bad day. It's not a good day. But to forget the self is to be enlightened by the 10,000 things, even having difficulties. To be enlightened by the 10,000 things is to free one's body and mind and those of others, to drop away attachment to our own body and mind as my body and my mind. If you realize that your body and mind are not your body and mind, that is the universal body and mind. How would you function? Then every day is a good day. Master Gurdogan goes on, no trace of this enlightenment remains, and this traceless enlightenment is realized forever. As long as we have a notion of enlightenment or delusion, then that gets in our way. To drop it all. So this statement by the Buddha has an awful lot to it, and it offers us the kind of the two sides of the equation in a very balanced kind of way. On the one hand, we're each of us endowed with the wisdom and virtue of the Tathagata. And on the other hand, to one degree or another, we don't know who we are, or we may have some sense of who we are, but we're not living fully out of that understanding. So, on the essential side, even our delusions are our true nature. On the relative side, we've got work to do. We must collect our inheritance. We'll just finish up with the preface to the assembly one more time. A speck of dust contains the 10,000 shapes. A single thought is endowed with the 3,000 realms. How much more so a great man crowned by heaven and standing upon earth, a sharp one who, when you speak of the head, knows of the tail. Don't disregard your very own spirit and bury your family treasure. We'll stop here and recite the four vows.
The teaching you have received is offered freely. If you would like to make a donation to support the continuation of this podcast service or learn more about practice opportunities at the Auckland Zen Centre, please visit www.aucklandzen.org.nz.